Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That, friends, was master of mirth and inveterate storyteller Brian Brown, who created the Brown Briefly. Together we, the Brieflies, strived with dogged determination to keep Brian's creative flame alive by bringing to you every week another episode of intelligent discussion of current events laced with humor and empathy. So let's get started, as we usually do, by introducing the Brieflies. Former Alaska Airlines pilot and Vachon Airport Commissioner Truman O'Brien is again at the dials, buttons, and knobs of the control panel in Voice of Vachon's Gene Bosch broadcast studio in ever-bustling and more audaciously bodacious downtown Vachon than ever. Good morning, Truman. How are you?
Hey, good morning. Thanks. I'm here. I'm awake. What can I say?
Awesome. And you've been there, and you gave a great shout-out to the Brown Briefly right there at the end of the scramble.
So I did. I did. Thank you.
Are continuing to join us.
Yeah, I'd be delighted always to do that. So
fantastic. Hey, also our globe-trotting guardian of the galaxy, historian extraordinaire, skipper of the Vachon, which is still floating, and president of the Vachon Heritage Museum, Bruce Hallman, is here. Good day, Bruce.
Good day. Good to see you, Kevin, and Brieflies, and Emily. And it's always good to know your boat's still floating, so thank you. Kevin and I share a slip at the yacht club, so we're side by side at the dock. So we let each other know when our boats are still floating. So,
yes, if we ever become divers, we might want to sink them to create a reef, but that is not the best environmentally sound practice these days. But hey, also, just so you know, joining Truman in the studio is Truman's wingmate, an airplane co-owner, exceptionally bright Fulbright scholar, and a former Washington State Associate Attorney General, Craig Bellis. How are you this morning, Craig?
I'm doing well, Kevin. Thank you very much. Looks like it's going to be a beautiful day.
Hey, you know, we're on Vachon. Every day on Vachon. Hey, let's also all welcome
isle.
Our small talk guest, our newest Vachon Maury Island Legislative Representative, Emily Alvarado. Great to have you on the show with us today, Emily.
It's great to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
I really look forward to hearing from you and some of the work you've been doing to represent us. So for those who've forgotten, I'm Kevin Jones, former sailboat builder, downhill ski instructor, and the sometimes too often heard voice of Indivisible Vachon and the Vachon Climate Action Group, who is still striving to create a livable planet overseen by a government we can all appreciate or at least tolerate. So before jumping in to talking about livable planets and representative government, let's check in with everybody about what special things you've experienced since our show last week. Truman, why don't you lead us off?
I went down to Ashland, Oregon a few weeks ago for the Shakespeare Festival, which I do a couple of times a year. And while we were down there, we got smoked out. I mean, boy, the smoke was amazing from the forest fires, and had to cancel three outdoor events that we were scheduled to go to. And so we said, well, you know, doggone it, we didn't get our full allotment of plays in this time. So we took a quick weekend and ran down, and we actually ended up only seeing one show, but also there's a winery that we really like, had a new release, so we had a chance to do that. But we went to the cabaret, and we saw a Pierrot play that was just outstanding, and had some good food and a real nice relaxing vacation. So that was what I did this week.
So if my wife is listening, she's going to be like, hey, we need to do that too.
Yeah, easily done. 58 minute flight on Alaska. The parole. Parole. Huh?
That's the hook for her, for sure.
All right.
Bruce, how's your week been?
Oh, it's been a good week. I had Had the pleasure this weekend on Sunday. We had a group of six educators from New Zealand who work with Carolyn Stratton on The Incredible Years, which is a program for preschool and sort of young children, sort of socializing them and families working together. It's a really an amazing program. And they're up here for a conference. There's a conference going on this week, a training of trainers, basically. And so these are Maori and Pākehā educators from New Zealand who have worked with the program for a number of years. And what's interesting in New Zealand is this program, The Incredible Years, has been adopted by the Ministry of Education, which means all of the schools in New Zealand are using this sort of preschool educational program to get parents and students ready for school. So it's very impressive. But we took them to see the troll, and they were suitably impressed by the troll. Captain Joe gave them a tour of the lighthouse, and I took them out on Vashona for a tour around the harbor. So they had a magnificent Vashon day, and it was a day sort of like today. It was it wasn't raining, at least. So it was a good introduction to Vashon for the Kiwis.
Nice. Yes. Well, I noticed that I was really thrilled when the rain started after that long, dry summer. But then it doesn't take long to wonder when the sun's coming back. I think that's in our cultural genes. Hey, Craig, good to see you as always. How has your week been?
Lots of odds and ends. More stairs that I'm redoing at the house on the deck. So I'll keep you informed. That should take me about 3 months to complete. Went to the chili cook-off at the Sportsman's Club this weekend. It was quite good. Good chili, I'll tell you. Truman knows about that. He's a chili maker.
Indeed.
And a chili eater.
Yeah, sure.
And I saw my co-host, Mike Nichols, the master of the mouth harp, playing at Dig Deep this weekend with Steve Eiderle. They go under the name of Lonesome and Pine and, you know, won the Northwest Blues Contest and went to Memphis here a while ago to compete there. Speaking of my co-host, our show is on Thursday. We're getting ready for that. Thursday morning scramble from 9 till noon. And our guest on that show is going to be Jeff Hoyt, who has the marvelous voice here on Vashon. And he'll be talking about the show that he's has at VCA on October 13, 14, and 15 called It's Vashon Isle. A recreation, if you will, of a 1926 show promoting Vashon that Truman and I and Bruce as well. Kevin, yes, and
yeah,
you
Kevin
signed.
Too,
Kevin
yeah.
was there too.
Yeah.
We all saw the preview of that, and he's got different shows for all of those days. Bruce, I think, is participating in what, all of those, every one of them. Yeah.
So, every single one of them. So yeah, it'll be
all right,
fun.
Good.
So check that out on VCA. There'd be one place to look it up, and it's called It's Vashon Isle, and it's it looks like a great piece of entertainment. So that's about it.
With the voice of Vashon's own voice artist, Jeff.
Yeah.
Clinton.
Oh, there is awesome. One other thing. Maybe, Kevin, you were going to get to it. Did you get a copy of the PSA on the Vashon Housing Forum that they asked us to read today?
I did not, actually.
Well, can I read that real quick?
Please.
I would say this is a good time for that.
Yeah, I think it's timely and a good segue as we get closer here. Vashon Housing Forum, Tuesday, October 3rd at 5:30 at the Vashon Center for the Arts. Hosted by Vashon Household and sponsored by Puget Sound Energy, the Vashon Housing Forum is an opportunity for the community to learn about and discuss affordable housing on Vashon. The Housing Forum will be an event to hear what is working on Vashon Island, what is working in other regional communities, how Washington State leaders are trying to design pro-housing policies, what solutions and ideas you think might work, and how you can attend help. We hope you can attend. Join Washington Senator Joe Wynn, Washington State Representative Emily Alvarado. There it is timely, isn't it? Seattle Times reporter Heidi Groover, a Vashon Household and Shelter America, who will speak
about the housing crisis in our community, statewide housing policy efforts and how they impact our island, and what efforts are currently in the pipeline to create more housing. Vashon's own Chris Ballew from the Presidents of the United States of America and Casper Baby Pants will be facilitating the discussion. It's free. All are welcome. To hold your seat and make a reservation, go to vashonhousehold.org.
And what's more, time and date?
The time and date on that is October 3rd
at
BCA.
That would be today.
That is today.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tuesday, October 3rd, today at Vashon Center for the Arts at 5:30 p.m.
Okay.
Wonderful. And a great segue. So, Emily, we want to ask you how your week is. And I'm just curious if you are indeed planning to brave the Washington State Ferries and come over to join us there at the Vashon Center for the Arts this afternoon, evening.
I will. And I can't wait to see folks to talk about affordable housing, how we create more affordability, one of my favorite topics to discuss, and to be on Vashon. I hope to see you and many folks from the community. My week was good. I had a good week. I'm at the point of life where a lot of my weekends are spent going to youth soccer games.
A soccer mom. Oh, yeah.
I am a soccer mom. I'm in the thick of it.
Fantastic. Well, you know, we know about soccer moms here in Western Puget Sound, so you are in very good company politically. So thank you for that, Emily, that great, awesome feedback. Hey, I have to say that this week, Susie and I are sort of planning our COVID breakout, you know, now that the disease is behind us and the vaccines are working excellently. So we went to Sporty's this Sunday for breakfast, both enjoying the working man, our favorite item on the menu. And I'll tell you what, Sporty's is hopping. So get your table early. We thoroughly enjoyed the chance to rub elbows with friends and acquaintances on Vashon. Also, I had a chance to get out into the Cascades and climbed to Kendall Peak. And the wonderful thing about it, getting outdoors this time of year, is you can find nice sunny days. And we got to the up to the summit. We're looking over the top, and there's snow on the peaks in the distance in wonderful Alpine Lakes wilderness. So that was spectacular. Also, after breakfast, we experienced a new traffic jam on Vashon as we headed out to Point Robinson. I think it's the Troll traffic jam.
Yeah,
it was packed. So go check out the Troll. It looks like you'd be in good company. Mm. All right, let's move on. Today in our nation's history is National Techies Day. So for all of those Microsoft folks and at-home workers on Vashon Mori who are basically working online as a techie, today's your day. And also today in history, after four decades of Cold War division and with pressure from the German Chancellor Helmut Kohl, Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev agreed to a unified Germany within NATO, leading to Germany's reunification this day in 1990. So given events in Ukraine, looks like in the past we were able to get along with Russia. Maybe that'll come forward as well. I want to also forecast some possible future history. We'll see what happens. My forecast is that Trump properties will be converted to low-income housing for all the immigrants that Florida Governor Ron DeSantis and Texas Governor Greg Abbott are busing to New York City.
So that's a great plan. That's a good plan, Kevin. You should promote that.
Sometimes you just wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and a flash of brilliance. So
there it is.
Kevin Borowitz Jones.
Only time will tell. So, hey, speaking of housing, we all know that it's an incredibly important issue across the country and right here at home. Our community council has an affordable housing committee, and local nonprofit Vashon Household is actively seeking additional affordable housing options. Oh, by the way, they're also making progress, and it looks like they're meeting their financial and schedule commitments to open up additional housing units here on Vashon. And of course, shared housing is another area of focus for them. So Representative Emily Alvarado, you are vice chair of the Housing and Local Government Committees in our state legislature. We, again, glad to see you joining us here on Small Talk.
Thanks for having me.
And let me jump right in. You've been on the job now for 9 months, if I can count. I think that's about right. And you've not only been through a legislative session, you've now survived your first extended session, right? Special session of the legislature. And so how's that going for you?
Well, you know, it's going great, I have to say. First of all, it's really just such an honor to be able to represent the 34th district. It's very humbling. And I think about that often over these last 9 months, what a responsibility it is to represent the constituents of the 34th district in Olympia. But I also came out of what was a really very successful legislative session as my first session. Together with my colleagues, we passed gun violence prevention laws. We passed an assault weapon ban. We passed a new legislation with permit to purchase. We defended reproductive freedom with a shield law that helps ensure that residents in our state are safe from the reach of anti-abortion laws elsewhere. We passed First in the Nation My Health, My Data Act that helps protect deeply personal information online, including reproductive health data. We updated the Growth Management Act so that we can better plan for and prepare for the effects of climate change. We made deep investments in our K-12 education system, $2.9 billion, which is the largest amount since 2017. And we're investing in the kind of wraparound school supports like nurses and counselors and social workers. We made really deep investments, which is, I think, very critical in special education, bringing more resources, $417 million to better support kids with special needs in our public schools. And we expanded free school lunch by an order of magnitude for more children to access healthy meals in schools. We made really focused investments in behavioral health care, which we know is a tremendous need in our community. And so I'm proud of all of that work we were able to accomplish. I'd say personally, I sponsored my first 8 bills, 5 of which became law.
Wow.
And they were really on a range of topics. Some of the bills that passed focused on strengthening the home care workforce so that seniors and folks with disabilities have more access to care. I had a bill to help make unions better prepared to represent employees. Had a legislation to help protect benefits for elders and folks with work-limiting disabilities so that they don't get their benefits garnished by the state. We advocated for a lot of investments that came to the district, including to Vashon. I fought personally for more investments in childcare that's provided on what they call non-standard hours, so non-9-to-5. We helped invest in a new opioid treatment facility in Soto, a new behavioral health care facility on Vashon, food services for medically fragile folks, food bank upgrades in White Center and South Park, and arts and creative economy investments at King Street Station and Highland Park. And then last thing I'll say, so proud to be able to be part of the first Latino Democratic Caucus in the state of Washington. Bicameral House and Senate Democrats coming together, which really is a testament to the changing demographics of the leadership in the state legislature, and proud to help to advance some racial equity and be more responsive to our constituents. So all in all, it went well.
Wonderful. You know, we might have to talk a little bit about redistricting the 15th in Yakima, but until then, so we know now, I think, why you want to stay in the work you're doing because of that amazing sense of accomplishment. But what first motivated you to put your name in the ring to run for legislative office?
For me, it's a deeply held belief that everyone deserves their basic needs met, that everyone should have that foundation for a good life, quality and affordable housing, healthcare, education, childcare, to be able to live in a healthy community, to be part of an economy that's working for working people. But we know so many of these things are broken, right? And they're not meeting the needs of our neighbors and for all of us. And we know that people, hardworking folks, can't afford the rent. They're being priced out. They're ending up in homelessness. We know that people are crushed by mounds of medical debt, or they can't access the treatment that they should be able to access. We know that there are parents that can't find childcare for their kids. And in the midst of all of that, I still am hopeful. And I believe that we can get to that place where everyone has a foundation. I believe that government can provide high quality public services to the people. And I want to be part of that change that makes it happen. I've spent my life working in public service at nonprofits and in local government. And when Rep. Cody retired, I thought, here's an opportunity to continue public service and to advance that shared mission.
I'm curious about, you said you you sponsored 8 bills and 5 of them actually passed. That's pretty remarkable for a junior legislator, I would think. But my question is, how in the world, I mean, you must have staff that help you write this stuff, obviously. But do you come up with the ideas, or is it a collective? You know, how does that happen?
It's a great question. First of all, we do have incredible staff that helps to make sure that when we write bills, that they're well-written. And
correct format.
In the good format. But I should say that the vast majority of ideas come from community. And they, you know, people approach you with concepts and you work together to build out a bill and to bring it forward. So it's a very collaborative process. There are things that I'd like to work on in the future that combine my best ideas with the input and experience of others, but it is collaborative.
So that's perfect segue into my next question, which is, what kinds of things do you look forward to that you're trying to accomplish?
Yeah, you know, I want to focus on the little things like eliminating poverty and growing the middle
just
class.
Little things,
Making public government work for all of us, making world-class education system, showing integrity in being part of government.
Is Save the Whales part of it? Just checking in.
Yeah. But very specifically, I think for me personally, I have spent most of my career working on housing, because housing is so foundational, having a safe, stable home. And I'm excited to help bring some expertise to tackle what really has become one of the most critical and challenging issues of our time in local communities and across the state and across the country, to help prioritize some smart and effective housing solutions.
Which brings us to, I understand House Bill was at 1695 passed. How exactly will that affect how will that be used to help affect the affordable housing?
So House Bill 1695 that I sponsored was a small bill, a little piece of a broader strategy. But what this bill does is, for many years, our community has used extra public land as a way and a place to create more affordable housing in many communities across the state. But we know that we have challenges not only with creating rental housing, but also creating homeownership opportunities that are affordable to moderate income people. Those are so out of reach. So this bill helps to say that surplus public land can also be used to create permanently affordable homeownership opportunities that help first-time home buyers buy new homes and that keep those homes affordable for generations to come. But it was part of something bigger. We made other complementary progress on housing last session. First of all, passing House Bill 1110, Missing Middle, which helps to direct cities across the state to create more duplexes, fourplexes, sixplexes, the kind of housing that creates more options in our communities. And then we also passed House Bill 1474, which is the Covenant Homeownership Account. And this was a really groundbreaking, important piece of legislation that helps to establish a new program to create down payment assistance to first-time home buyers. But it's a response to the racially restrictive covenants that we find all across our state, 40,000 property deeds across the state that were part of a pattern and practice of discrimination in housing, excluding people of color from living in particular communities and in different homes. And this solution will help unlock and open up new homeownership opportunities to try to help close the homeownership racial gap that exists and to make new options across the state.
So please explain, you said it was to help with down payment. So is it providing funds for this down payment, and is this rolled into the loan somehow, or how does that work?
Yeah. So we'll now assess a new fee on recording documents, and that new fee will be collected and administered by the State Housing Finance Agency to provide low cost to provide down payment assistance that people complement with mortgages that they access on the open market to help be able to afford homes that otherwise would have been out of reach.
Okay.
Really helping folks who make well below median income to be able to buy homes, knowing how unaffordable they are in the market.
Right. I've got a question. Kevin, I'm going to jump in here for a moment. First of all, I want to thank you, Representative Alvarado, for joining us on the Brown Briefly and for at the Ferry Forum here a few weeks ago, where I first met you. I was quite impressed with your enthusiasm and your energy, and appreciate you being one of our representatives.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. I've always wondered about when somebody gets elected to a job like yours, there's not a lot of time to learn how things work. There is truly a steep, steep learning curve about procedures and how everything comes together or doesn't come together, as we're finding out at the national level as we speak. Amongst all of the things that you've encountered in the last several months, is there anything that was the most unexpected or the biggest surprise to you in your job?
Yeah, a lot of time in the legislature when you're in session is spent sitting in committee meetings or floor action and listening to bills being briefed and speeches being given. And it can become a bit of a blur, as you say, in part with the learning curve when you go from meeting to meeting. What stood out for me was, in between all of that, the connections with constituents who come to Olympia or who have a Zoom call with you and really quite vulnerably share their story. And I used to be a community organizer. I know that I used to tell people, share your story. It's really impactful for legislators, but you can't really explain what it feels like to be the elected official when people share their stories. It was unexpected how much those stories connect with me and stick with me. I remember so clearly being pulled out of a committee meeting to talk to grocery workers from the district in the hallway and to hear what their needs were. I remember talking to the Vashon School Board and the young people who are on the school board talking about what they need in their school. I remember the young people from Maritime High School who zoomed in and talked to me about plastics in the water and how we keep plastics out of the Sound and the Duwamish. And I remember talking to folks who are in recovery, saying what they really need to address our opioid crisis, to address the fentanyl crisis, what it really looks like both as a person who's in recovery and as people who provide recovery supports, what's needed. So those touch points mattered so much, even in the chaos and the hecticness of the legislature. And I encourage people to continue to reach out because the stories make a difference, and I remember them.
That's really great to hear. Obviously, you are not intending to hide out in an ivory tower.
Correct.
Hey, Emily, I have a question for you about, first, I want to thank you for joining us on Briefly, and I really look forward to hearing you tonight and being at the Housing Forum. It should be a very interesting sort of eye-opening experience for many Islanders, I hope. But tell us a little bit about the 34th District. I mean, it's one of the most diverse districts in Washington State. So tell us a little bit about the district itself and in which communities, both physical, ethnic, and ideological communities, you want to draw into engagement and why.
Yeah, thanks for that question. Well, the 34th District is definitely diverse in so many ways, having both the center of downtown Seattle, rural island, unincorporated county parts, and two cities, Burien, parts of Burien and Seattle. So very diverse in that way, and socioeconomically and racially diverse. I think for me, one of the most important pieces is that there are parts of the 34th District that have never been part of the district before. Because of redistricting, South Park and Georgetown and Pioneer Square are now part of the 34th, and it is really a priority for me to make sure that those community members know that they're part of this district, that they feel a part of this district, and they have an opportunity to make their voices heard about some of the unique issues that they do face, particularly some of the environmental justice challenges that are unique to the Duwamish communities. So I'm hopeful and intentional about outreach and engagement of those new parts of the district. You know, beyond that, I care very deeply about engaging folks who are least likely to be engaged. Young people and youth, folks of color, low-income communities, people who haven't voted before, unhoused people. These are priorities for me because I think we do better when we hear from the depth and diversity of our community. And then, you know, lastly, I'd say that there, because the district includes unincorporated parts of King County, like Vashon and like North Highline and White Center, the state legislature becomes even more of a frontline government than in other places where there's a city government to interface with. And I know that the county is there, but it becomes even more important, and saw that so clearly at the ferry conversation, how reliant people are upon the state legislature as being really a key service deliverer. And I want to continue to engage those constituents and communities and be responsive in terms of providing what is a constituent service.
Let me follow that up with this concept of affordable housing, because you've got such a diverse district. I mean, the need for you know, affordable housing in a gentrifying areas like Burien and Bashan and West Seattle versus, you know, Pioneer Square versus, you know, the Rainier Valley, you know, versus White Center. I mean, how do you balance that?
Well, I think that first and foremost, the challenge that you see everywhere is actually the same. We have housing costs that are escalating far too rapidly, and we have to tackle housing costs that are rising. We have to address it. It's unbearable for people. The solutions might look different in different communities, though, and we do need an approach that one looks at creating more housing across the board on the market, lower density housing for some lower density communities, higher density housing for our transit hubs. We have to do that. We have to make sure that we have affordable housing that's subsidized, that the market's never going to create. And all of the communities that you mentioned need that, from Vashon to South Park to my neighborhood here in West Seattle. We need affordable housing that's serving low-income and extremely low-income people who are never going to be able to afford it on the market until there's a fundamental shift in what's happening in our economy. And then lastly, we have to make sure that there are intentional, thoughtful regulations that are put in place across the state so that people aren't facing exorbitant year-over-year rent increases. To me, this is something we haven't yet tackled. We have to tackle, has to be a priority in the state of Washington, that folks shouldn't have 20% rent increases year over year when wages don't go up that much. Social Security doesn't go up that much. So, you know, the government supported many, many years ago a fixed 30-year back mortgage. We have to create that kind of predictability and thoughtfulness for renters too, who make up 40% of the district in the 34th district. They need some stability and predictability too, and we can get there with thoughtful regulations.
You know, for me, I think that when we think of low income housing, we don't really think about who it's affecting. But you know, we've encountered this here on the island very much so with our service people. I mean, there are people who are our waitresses, our people who are working in, you know, low-income jobs. But, I mean, they're out there working, and they're busting their behinds trying to get by. But without some kind of effort to make income or make housing available to them, they're just simply out of luck. And I think we need to remember that when we're talking about that. We're talking about hardworking families who are trying to make it. And
absolutely.
It's not the degenerate, you know, drug abusing, blah, blah, blah. It's that backbone of the community.
Well, there is not a place in the country anymore where a minimum wage worker can afford a two-bedroom apartment to care for their family. Exactly. So there is a fundamental mismatch, and we have to address that. And we also need housing for people who are struggling with drug addiction, mm-hmm. because we know that when you're housed, you're better set up on a path towards recovery. So we need to make those investments to help so many people in our community.
So bring that down to Vashon specific, and you'll talk more about that tonight. What do you see happening on Vashon? What do you see some of the solutions on Vashon?
Yeah, good teaser for this evening's event. Hope you come out to join us. You know, one of the things that I mentioned earlier is that in smaller, more rural communities, there is an opportunity to create affordable homeownership options that moderate income people can buy. And I know Vashon Household is a good partner in creating, under a land trust model, permanently affordable homes. That's something that we did make record investments in the state legislature this year as part of the housing trust fund into permanently affordable homeownership. But we need to continue to make more investments and have dedicated investments in this kind of housing. think it's a great model for Vashon to keep homes affordable for the long term and to help people who have been part of the fabric of the community for a while or who work in the community and are unable to afford it to have a place to live. That's a model that I think we can really expand.
Wonderful. Of course, listeners, you will be able to hear a lot more on that topic tonight at 5:30, Vashon Center for the Arts, as Craig mentioned in that public service announcement. Emily, before we leave this topic, I just wanted to say I really appreciate your focus on equity and inclusion and fairness and those basic values and motivators that brought you into your representation of us. But speaking of equity, inclusion, and representation, the 15th Legislative District is in Yakima. I understand it is the largest Latina community in the state. And probably a surprise to maybe a number of our listeners is that there's basically a discussion about changing those district boundaries again, another round at redistricting. Do you want to make any comments about what your expectations are there and the your view of why that's important?
Yeah, well, look, if people can't make their voices heard as part of the electoral system, as part of voting, then we don't have a fully functioning democracy. And the court made a determination that the district was drawn in a way that was not consistent with the Voting Rights Act and that was denying Latino communities fair representation. And I think that we owe it to make sure the courts can come up with a solution that better gives people their voice. It's critical part of making sure that we have all communities represented and that their voices are part of the legislative process.
Wonderful, and thank you for that insight. We know folks can hear you tonight talk at Vashon Center for the Arts. Tell our listeners who want to kind of keep up with the work you're doing, how can they really stay appraised of your values, focus, and priorities?
Well, thank you. I hope that folks got a chance to read our end of session newsletter that was put out by myself with Representative Fitzgibbon and Senator Wynn. We all collaborate a lot and were able to get information out to folks. If you didn't, please reach out to my office. You can email me anytime, emily.alvarado@ledge.wa.gov. It might take a while, but I do respond to emails that come in. You can go through the legislative information system where you fill out a form and they direct it straight to our offices of the offices that represent you. Apparently out there, I have a Facebook page for techie National Techie Day. It's not my strongest suit. I'm not as active as I'd like to be, but you can find me there as well. And I very much enjoy meeting people through the interim. And I very much, as I mentioned earlier, welcome people to come down to Olympia during session to connect also.
Wonderful. So that's emily.alvarado@leg.wa.gov, or as we affectionately call it, leg.wa.gov. So you are very much invited to stay through the entirety of our hour today. We're going to be jumping into some local news and then some national. You have an opportunity to comment on other your political colleagues now at the federal level. But before we do that, Bruce, Heritage Museum renovation. Tell us what's going on at the museum.
Sure. We got almost a year ago now, we got a large $300,000 NEH grant to redo the permanent exhibit at the Vashon Museum, Heritage Museum. And so what we've been doing is working for the last year plus, well, we've actually started this process about 7-8 years ago. We opened the museum in 2006. So it's been 15 years really since the exhibit was sort of totally rethought. And so we're working with some just incredible museum designers, some artists, some historians, to sort of try and find a way to tell the Vashon story in new and interesting ways. And to make it clear that the Vashon story is not just one story, it's a story. And there are multiple sort of stories out there that go into making what Vashon is and understanding what the island is and how it came to be what it is. So we're in the midst of that process. We're going to close the museum in January. So January 5th, first Friday in January, will be a big celebration, a closing of the Natural Wonder exhibit that's been up for since the very beginning of COVID. It was closed down for a while during COVID. So we're closing Natural Wonders, which is an exhibit done with the Land Trust and the Vashon Nature Center, which tells the story of Vashon's natural history, sort of the environmental history of Vashon Island. But that will close, and so we'll be closed until July. We'll open first Friday in July. We'll be open for Strawberry Festival in July of next year. And so hopefully by the time we open in July, you'll see a very sort of innovative new way of seeing Vashon Island. So that's the process we're involved in right now. And it's been very exciting, challenging, but also an exciting way to just go back sort of and rethink what are the stories of Vashon Island? What are the voices that you want to hear? You know, what are the multiple sort of histories? There's not just one history, the multiple histories that make an island, that make any community what it is. And so very exciting, but thanks for asking.
Yeah, so Bruce, as the museum retools, so to speak, are you looking for any particular type of volunteer engagement in that process?
Sure. Yeah, we're just finishing up with the narrative structure of the exhibit, and we'll be getting that out to the community in a variety of ways. And so, certainly want to hear back from people about, oh, you forgot this, or what about that? You know, all those kinds of parts of putting an exhibit together. But also people with individual skills. One of the interesting things to me about the exhibit, we're going to have a large interactive map of the island that will allow you to dive in a variety of ways to see how the ferries have changed, where the ferry docks were and where they are now, how the roads developed and changed Vashon, you know, where, you know, churches and community halls. And I mean, it's that ability to sort of almost ask any question and dive into it in this interactive map, or to find out, okay, I live here, what's going on here, and see the multiple layers of what's happened in the community where you live on the island. So that's, you know, so anybody with technical skills or GIS skills or sort of that interactive mapping skills, let us know. You know, Vashon is an amazing place, as we all know, and you tap into people, and there's an incredible skill base on Vashon Island. We're working with lighting. I mean, lighting's a very important part of a museum exhibit. And there's a couple people that live on the island that are professional museum lighting people. And sort of like, wow, who would have thought? And so it's that kind of thing that there's just a tremendous amount of expertise out there in a community like Vashon. And so the open invitation is, if you have skills, even if you don't have skills, but you have interest, let us know. Come get involved with it.
You know, I will say, Bruce, just personally, and I think our long-term listeners have also maybe got an understanding of this, is historians aren't just looking backwards. Historians are engaging with the here and now to be able to not only tell our past story, but our future story as it evolves. So thank you for that invitation to bring people in. Okay, so let's jump into some national news and let's see. I think our listeners have been waiting a whole month for this, because the last time I hosted a show, I said that I was going to pose a question. Based on what Melania has learned being married to the Donald, what will she insist be added to any future prenups agreements with the next guy? Anybody, Truman?
Yeah, listen, it's in the news right now. She's renegotiating the current prenup with the current guy. Because there's some things, I mean, I'm just looking at the headline here. It just says, Melania Trump quietly renegotiating her prenup for the third time as the former president's latest legal troubles threaten the finances. So I can see that, you know, that's probably a pretty good incentive to do it right now before
Yeah. Craig, did you have a comment there?
Yeah, I think they're hung up on a particular term. One of the things I'd recommend that she request in that prenup is that she be married to a minimally functioning adult.
Yeah.
The vote is failed. Mm-hmm. So Kevin is distracted.
Kevin is being pulled away.
I'm distracted. I have a news break here.
Oh, yes. About the...
block the vote so that the vote can go on.
Cool. Sorry. What my apologies. So, Craig, did that wrap it up?
Yeah, I'm anxious to hear. Did they take a vote on the floor of the House of Representatives?
I hear it's going to be an ongoing saga. Yeah, the failure to block the vote, apparently. So the vote's going to continue, is what we hear. We're talking about our current Speaker of the United States House, Kevin McCarthy, whether he will indeed retain that position, which is actually what we're going to get into next. But before we do that, any other thoughts about what Melania might be thinking about for the current or maybe a future prenup agreement? Okay, very good. We can come back to this. My thought was if the current guy goes to jail, she should get all the money.
Yeah. Well, what's left, if there's any left after the civil suit that is in progress right now.
Yeah, I hope that she doesn't end up getting all the debt. Exactly. Have we got everybody frozen on there?
So let's see. The government, we are or not? So the government... but I'm wondering now if Speaker McCarthy is... House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, is he regretting keeping the government open now that fellow Republican Matt Gaetz has introduced a motion to vacate, basically, which threatens his job? What y'all think? Would McCarthy maybe appreciate the government being shut down right now?
Well,
it's hard to say what the Speaker wants and doesn't want, because if I could speak, from my partial point of view, his tune changes from moment to moment. He certainly didn't do himself any favors trying to acquire the assistance of the Democratic caucus with the comments he made on Face the Nation and some other Sunday morning shows about how it was all their fault that they were almost on the brink, or it was the Democrats' fault that they were on the brink of a shutdown. Yeah, there's no trust there. Whatever happens, I'm chagrined and quite worried about our national government, our federal government.
Let me follow up that with a question for Emily. We see this sort of dysfunction, rifting Washington D.C. apart and sort of paralyzing the ability of the federal government, particularly the Congress, particularly the House, to operate. We don't see that in Washington State. We've got a pretty safe sort of Democratic majority in the state legislature. But how do you see us, I'll put us in the same box here, engaging with those with other political opinions and not becoming a tyranny of the majority?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I do have to say that I was pleasantly surprised by how functioning our legislative process is in Olympia when I got there. We had a freshman class of, I might get the numbers wrong here, 11 Democrats and a similar number of freshman Republicans in the House. And we were able to talk to one another, find some commonality, engage with one another. And that's not to say we always disagreed. And end of the day, having the Democratic majority does get some things passed that won't ever get support by the other party. But the vast majority of bills that we vote on in Olympia are bipartisan. A tremendous number go unreported as being, quite frankly, unanimous. And then on some hotly contentious issues, we benefit from having the majority setting the tone. But it is definitely more collegial and not at all like what you hear about in the other Washington.
Yeah.
That's heartening to hear. So thank you.
Yeah, you know, I keep wondering, what can we do to make those idiots talk to each other? I mean, truly, I mean, it's got to be something.
Well, there was a couple of actual Republican, I think, congressmen that were on the news this morning that openly said they needed a marriage counselor.
Yeah, truly.
At least a good mediator, because things seem to be getting farther and farther apart.
There you go, Craig. They're calling your name.
True full employment.
There you go.
That is in the job description, yes. All right. I think that I keep wondering as we hear this news, right, and we're all reacting to it, and it's so, there's the word unprecedented has been used probably an unprecedented number of times regarding federal politics. Bruce, is this what living in interesting times looks like?
Very much so. See, the idea that what defines interesting, of course, is always the question. But yeah, I mean, Heather Cox Richardson, if many of you read hers, her sort of a daily sort of column, if you will. I mean, she's, Democracy, right, her new book, very interesting. She's constantly pointing out how it's nothing new. The struggles that we're seeing right now, they may be more intense than they have at different times in the past, but we did have a civil war over very similar kinds of issues, where people took up arms against one another. So, the sense that there was ever sort of a normalcy in the past is a fallacy, and I think that's part of the role of historians is sort of constantly to remind us all that we all live in interesting times, and times have always been interesting, and it's our particular challenge how we confront and how we deal with the interesting times that we are in right now. And that's why it's so so helpful to have somebody like Emily here to talk to us and sort of reassure us that there is not total chaos in Olympia. Mm-hmm.
Well, I have to say that over last weekend, not this just last weekend, but the weekend before last, had a chance to meet with Indivisible Group leaders across the state at the Washington Indivisible Network, and Senator Monica Dinger stopped by. She lives in the area where the gathering was held. And I reflected that the first doors that I ever knocked on to trying to persuade a voter was for her election. Basically reflected back that was not that many years ago. That's only maybe 6 or 7 years ago where our Senate went from Republican to Democrat control. Today, I think the numbers are like 7 or 9 Democratic margin in the Senate, and I think 14 in the House. And so it seems like I don't really know how we change that rapidly in that short a period of time. But as Emily mentioned, there's clearly demands to be working with others, but the face of the legislature changes. I think a reflection of the state. Let's see. One last thing I should mention. We're still seeing the reflections of the insurrection and the breaking into the Capitol building on January 6th. It turns out that Proud Boys have been subject to the legal process. Enrico Terrio, Proud Boys national chairman and top leader, now sentenced to 22 years in prison. A gentleman from Auburn, Ethan Nordine, sentenced to 18 years. There was a fellow named Dominic Pizzola who was sentenced to 10 years. Craig, I've been wanting to ask you this question. So Pizzola, after a show of contrition on the stand, including actual tears, after his sentence, he was very contrite. He was, I think, hoping that he could share his humility with the court. As they gave him his sentence, he walked out of the courtroom, said, "Trump won." Might that affect his chances for an early release?
I don't think it'll make any difference one way or the other. To tell you the truth, there are a lot of individuals in the United States who think Trump won because of the constant drumbeat of that that lie, and I don't think that's going to be held against him. It's an unfortunate situation to say the least. Just like some of the rantings that are going on in court yesterday and today, will probably have little or no effect on the judge. Judges are oftentimes confronted with people in front of them who are trying to upset them, maybe to the point where they actually will remove themselves from the case, but I don't think that's going to happen. So that's my two cents.
All right. Well, thank you, because I think it's helpful for get some perspective on what these interesting times bring to us in our communications and our headlines in the papers. I want to say that as we leave you for another week, our guest for the next edition of the Brown Briefly will be former Beachcomber editor Liz Shepard. So we look forward to having Liz on the show next week. For Truman, Bruce Craig, and Representative Emily Alvarado, who I'm dearly glad that you could join us today, I'm Kevin Jones. We'll see you next week.